You listen to the Jason Greger Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca. Joins us, Michael. How you doing?
Guys, I'm good. I am sitting on top of CN Tower. I'm like Drake on the cover of his album Views right now, talking to you, getting ready to talk World Series. I love it.
Nice, nice. Was that your first time up the tower?
It is my first time at the tower. My second time in Toronto, but first time up at the top of the tower, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've seen lots of people who try to walk over the glass when you look down below. And, like, I've seen people fall over that can't do it. Did you do the walk over the glass? How'd you handle it?
I just did it. I didn't fall over, but I did see Final Destination last year when it came out around this time. And I don't know if you've seen the beginning of that movie, the opening sequences in a giant tower with a glass floor like that, everyone dancing and the glass crashes and falls apart. So that was going through my head as I was walking across that glass. I'll admit that.
So there was no dancing. You were just strolling across it.
I was taking a nice stroll looking down. Yeah. Trying to keep my balance and equilibrium right.
Yeah. Now let's look at this this matchup. It's a great matchup. Obviously, the Dodgers are the favorite, but you know they got unreal pitching. They strike out a lot of batters. Whereas the Jays, no one strikes out less than the Toronto Blue Jays. When you look at, let's start with Blake Snell, and just he's been unbelievable for the Dodgers thus far. What has made him so dangerous in the playoffs?
He's got a chip on his shoulder, guys. You know, this is a guy who was told back when he pitched with the Tampa Bay Rays in the World Series against the Dodgers in 2020. And obviously he was pulled from that infamous Game 6 by Kevin Cash, his manager. Really upset about that because he was just throwing an absolute gem that game. And he told me his goal this postseason was, A, to play in the big games. That's why he signed with the Dodgers in the offseason. He wanted to pitch in the playoffs and he wanted to have success. And not just that, but go deep in games. He told me his goal was to still be on the mound when they sang God Bless America in the postseason. He was happy he was able to do that when he threw 8 innings, faced the minimum, all 24 in the game 1 of the NLCS against the Brewers. And he wants to do it again in the World Series on the biggest stage. He wants to go deep. And if he can have the chance to throw a complete game, I'm telling you, he's going to tell Dave Roberts he wants to do it. And he's just been absolutely sensational this postseason, only allowed one run, and that was in the wild card game against the Reds. So he's been dominant. And to your guys' point, this matchup is like the immovable object meets the unstoppable force. The team with the most runs in the postseason, the most contact, Vladimir Guerrero with like the best average, one of the best postseasons as far as the hitter's concerned we've ever seen, against arguably the most dominant pitching staff. We call them the four aces here in Los Angeles if you're a poker player. That we've seen in the playoffs. So the Dodgers, they strike out a lot of guys. They shut down a lot of hot offenses, and Toronto is definitely the hottest offense still going.
What about Ohtani? Like, he had the amazing 3-home-run game, but he's only hitting .220 in the playoffs despite that monster game. What was happening with him at the plate up until that point?
Yeah, great question, and it's one that, you know, is a million-dollar answer we all want to figure out. We have some ideas. I'll give you my speculation and best guess. But up until he had a great wild card against the Reds, and then all of a sudden he struggled in the DS against the Phillies. Now, part of that was the Phillies have some nasty pitching and some left-handers with some low arm angles and Sanchez and Lazardo. And so he was facing some tough pitching matchups, but it carried over into Milwaukee in the CS. And it wasn't until he got back to Dodger Stadium before he started as a pitcher in Game 4, and he decided to take batting practice on the field for the very first time all year. This guy is always hiding during batting practice for the Dodgers. He likes to do his work down in the hitting machine in the cage, and the Dodgers have this very expensive simulated pitching machine that throws velocity. It throws curveballs, sliders, sinkers, and they can even match arm angles from the opponent's pitching that they want to face. And so Ohtani does most of his work down there in that area. And sometimes when you do that, even though it's a little more productive because you're seeing, you know, something similar to what you might see in the game, for someone like Shohei Ohtani, he might have just been too much in his head, if that makes sense, thinking too much, thinking about where the ball is going to go and the movement of the pitches. And when we saw him at the plate during those struggles, it looked like he was a little lost. It looked like he was guessing at pitches and was fooled a lot. Suddenly in that game 4, after hitting batting practice on the field, he kind of played more free, right? Where you're just reacting to what's being thrown at you rather than trying to think too much. And I think that's what we saw in that game 4. And if there's any indication, he took batting practice yesterday ahead of game 1. Maybe it'll carry over for the World Series.
When he does struggle, which is rare, are there certain pitches? Are there certain areas where teams have had success pitching him?
Yeah, if you pitch him in on his hands, especially from a lefty where it's hard to see the ball for a left-handed hitter out of the hand, and if you throw it inside to him, it's hard for him to turn around quickly. This is a guy that if you throw it on the other side of the plate, low and away from him, if he can reach and get contact at the ball, as he kind of showed when he kind of flailed on that swing when he hit a leadoff triple against the Phillies in game four of the DS series, you know, he can still get to things, and he has the power to go oppo if you throw away from him. So the success with some low arm angles from the left-hand side inside at his hands, he's not able to turn on that ball, and he gets fooled a lot. And sometimes if you throw it high enough, he'll swing at it, and he can't stay away from those pitches. So really Shohei's at his best when he's very disciplined and not swinging at balls. And when he was struggling, he was swinging at balls all over the place.
Okay. Mookie Betts, it is rare to see someone go from being an all-star right fielder to say, hey, you're going to play shortstop now. Like, that is a massive change. And he's, like, I look at his defensive numbers. He's like the 92nd percentile. Like, he's, easy's is probably unfair, but man, he's made that transition look smooth. Why did they come up with that plan?
It was a plan that kind of was not necessarily something that was predetermined, I guess is the best way to... It was kind of thrust upon the Dodgers based on injuries. So obviously they lost Corey Seager. He's the last player we know to win two World Series MVP with the Dodgers and with the Rangers. Obviously dominant with the Dodgers in the World Series in 2020. And so he left in free agency to sign with the Rangers. And then... Hold on one second. And he left to go sign with the Rangers in free agency. And so then Gavin Lux was supposed to be the incumbent shortstop for the Dodgers and take over that position. Unfortunately, he tears his ACL and they don't have a shortstop. So Mookie is the one who says, I'll go play shortstop. And of course the Dodgers are like, have you ever played shortstop? And he's like, not since high school. And they were like, sure, let's go try this experiment. And that worked up until they needed to find a place for Miguel Rojas. They went and signed Tommy Edman and traded for him last year at the deadline, and he plays short and center and second. And so they needed Mookie to move back out to right field just because they needed an outfielder. Well, they signed Teoscar Hernandez. They signed Michael Conforto, who's not in the roster, but they need to find a place for Kike Hernandez to play. Left field has been that position for him during this postseason run. And so Mookie this season again offered to take over shortstop full-time. This time he worked on something very interesting. If you look at his numbers from last year to this year, he had a lot of errors last year, and most of them were throwing errors. He worked on his arm angle as far as how he's going to throw the ball from short to second and short to first. That one change, working on the arm angle, made him lead the league in defensive run save this year. He's a Gold Glove finalist at the position. And like you said, it's just something you don't see, but just shows the kind of athlete Mookie Betts is.
Yeah, no, it's pretty darn impressive, no question. You look at this matchup, how do you expect the Dodgers to approach Vladdy Guerrero? Now, their pitchers are pretty confident. Like, are they going to pitch to him? Do you think they're going to try to nibble on the edges? Are they going to walk him? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think they're going to pitch to him. If you look at what they did in that series, I think it was like middle of August when the Blue Jays came to Dodger Stadium, and the Dodgers were maybe one inning away, one Blake Treinen eighth inning bullpen implosion away from sweeping that series. Vladdy didn't have a lot of success until he homered off Treinen in the eighth inning of that third and final game on a Sunday day game at Dodger Stadium. And Treinen has just struggled all year, for being honest, and especially in August and September. So I think they're going to try to attack him similarly as they did, especially with their starting pitchers. But if you look at the moves they made on this World Series roster that came out this morning around 10 a.m. Eastern time here in Toronto, they decided to leave off Tanner Scott, who might have been eligible to come back. Alex Vesey is dealing with a personal problem with him and his wife, a family emergency. He's not even in Toronto. He was off the roster. And they put on two hard-throwing righties, and Edgardo Enriquez and Will Klein out of the bullpen. Enriquez, by the way, can throw 103.3 miles per hour. He has the fastest pitch thrown this year by a Dodgers pitcher, Shohei Ohtani right below him. And then Will Klein also throws over 100. That tells me, for that string of righties that the Blue Jays have, that they might want to look to those guys for a kind of quick matchup against that righty row where they're going to throw velocity at him, maybe high up, maybe inside, as we were just talking about, as a way to attack Ohtani. And I think that's how you're going to see him attack Vladito and the other righties like Springer, for example.
Well, yeah, it's interesting to see Springer. We don't know yet if we're going to see, I haven't seen it yet, if Bo Bichette's playing today or not, but it'll be, when he did play,
starting at second base.
He's starting at second. Okay.
And now, he's hitting cleanup. Hitting cleanup too.
Well, I'd expect him to hit cleanup. That doesn't surprise me because he led the league in hits and he finished third despite missing the last 25 or 28 games or whatever the number was. Like, he can hit. Now, he hasn't played in a month, but he adds a lot of depth to a lineup. Like, Milwaukee was the best regular season team, but they just couldn't hit the Dodgers, right? The Jays have been proven that they can extend, even if they don't get a hit, they'll get 7-8 pitches and a lot of at bats and try to stretch out guys. How do you see Schnell and the pitching staff? How do they fare against a team? And maybe it's hard to say that there's a team similar to the Jays at the plate.
Yeah, it's a great question. So the Dodgers starting pitching and their whole staff, but we're just going to look at the starting pitching because those were the guys that went deep and throughout the playoffs. They have almost a 40% whiff rate. It's the highest in any pitching staff right now still in the postseason. And so you're right. It gets a team that doesn't strike out a lot and hits a lot of contact and sees a lot of pitches in the Blue Jays. Now, you mentioned the Brewers, and I just want to point out, as we went into that series in the NLCS, I did a deep dive on the Brewers. They were also a team that doesn't strike out, that puts the ball in play, that makes contact. And then once they get on, they're aggressive. They steal bases. They bunt. They do small ball. They run on you. But when you have a dominant starting pitcher, as we saw with Blake Snell in game one and then Yamamoto in game two, Glasnow in three, Ohtani in four, it completely neutralized that. And after the game, I was talking to Clayton Kershaw, who, guys, this World Series is his last ride, right? He's riding off into the sunset a la Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. He told me, great starting pitching begets and beats better offense and hitting, and that might be the case. Look, this is what I said. This matchup is great because it's the best offense in the Blue Jays right now, the best lineup against the best pitching staff. And if you ask Kershaw anyways, he thinks it's the pitching that will beat the hitting.
What about the defense? How would you rank the Dodgers' defense? The Jays got a real, they got a lot of guys, the Gold Glovers at different positions. How do you rank the Dodgers overall defensively?
Overall defensively, they're very good. A lot of guys who are Gold Glove finalists on this team. One guy in Miguel Rojas, who's a utility Gold Glove finalist, he's not even starting today, and he's probably only going to start against left-handed pitching in this series, so we might not even see him a lot. But they have two weaknesses in the outfield, guys, where they were the worst at that position in the major leagues this year. That's in right field with Teoscar Hernandez, who's already had a couple errors and misplays in the outfield during this postseason for the Dodgers, and also in center field with Andy Páez. These are guys, if you watch the Dodgers' postseason run, Dave Roberts puts defensive substitutions in for them late in the games. Once they've had their final at-bat, whether that comes in the 7th, 8th, or 9th, he takes them out for a defensive replacement. So if you're the Blue Jays, if you can hit the ball out to right field or center or in the gap somewhere, you might be able to get an extra base or two out of it, because those are guys in those positions anyway, where misplays can happen, where errors can happen, and where you can exploit that if you're looking at weaknesses on the Dodgers' defense.
Do you expect Kershaw, he mentioned he feels they're confident. Is he going to be involved? I didn't even look. Is he on their 26-man roster?
He is on the roster, and I hope we do get a chance to see him, but I don't expect to see him in leverage at all. They tried to use him in a close game in game three of the DS against the Phillies, and he gave up like three runs. They just crushed him. Okay. And they tried to use him for multi-innings. He got out of a jam the first inning, and then the second inning he got into some trouble. So I think Kershaw's going to be more mop-up duty. If this is a game that's a blowout either way, maybe the Blue Jays have a 4-5-6 run lead, I think you bring Kershaw out to eat up innings. And if you're beating the Blue Jays 10-0 in the fourth or fifth inning or something, and you want to pull that starter easy and rest him maybe for his next start in the series, if that's possible, maybe you see Kershaw in that sense coming out in a Dodgers blowout late in the game. And that's honestly, if I'm just looking at this purely from the lens of what would be best to see Kershaw kind of ride out in, that's where I'd like to see him, on the mound with the Dodgers leading big and a chance to kind of go off in the sunset victorious.
Michael, one last one that's totally not related to the World Series itself. We saw the huge investigation that's going on in the NBA right now, 34 arrests. And, there's lots of people saying, oh, Shohei Ohtani did the same thing. Where do you come out on that? Obviously they say, hey, his interpreter was the one who did it all. Is that investigation pretty close, or do you think MLB is going to have to be more leery, like all the teams, based on like how in depth this was in the NBA, that MLB might have to do something more in the offseason to ensure that their league doesn't fall into the same category next season as the NBA is right now?
Yeah, and we already saw some things early in the season. There were some players in baseball who were being investigated for betting on sports. And I think what happens when you legalize sports gambling in, you know, I know it's individual states, and it's actually ironically still not legalized in California where we are. But once you legalize it, once you open it up, these are going to be the negatives that come from this, right? It's billions of dollars in industry. That's why they're legalizing it. That's why you see MLB partnering with DraftKings and Caesars Sportsbooks, and you see all these commercials out there, but now you're seeing people trying to exploit it, people betting on their own sport. We're going back to the Pete Rose era at times, it seems like. And it's not just exclusive to the NBA or exclusive to Major League Baseball. For me, it's across all sports, and that could be anything, even F1 racing, for example, which I know is in the news because they just signed a deal with Apple. So I think this is going to be a problem that's not going to go away anytime soon. As far as the Ohtani investigation, that is closed. We at NBC were able to interview the bookie, Matthew Boyden, who lived out in Newport Beach in a mansion, about what happened and how he was able to kind of lure in Ipe Mizuhara, his interpreter. And it just seems like Ipe was a very bad gambler who had the ultimate line of credit because he was using Shohei Ohtani's money from his Angels days, from his contract and payouts from the Angels, and was able to just use that to get into huge gambling debt. So I think Ohtani's in the clear and that investigation is closed. But as far as what we're seeing and what we're seeing with the NBA, which guys, it's something like out of the TV show Sopranos, right? Illegal poker games where people are cheating and you're luring NBA players and coaches like Chauncey Billups to come out and, you know, play with these high rollers, and then you're cheating them out of their money. This reminds me of Tony Soprano at his highest. So I don't think we're going to see the end of it anytime soon. I think it's going to be an ongoing problem that all sports are going to be having to deal with.
Awesome stuff, man. Enjoy the game and enjoy the series. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.